Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Puyatmann und da!
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. It's been a massive weekend of football on and off the pitch. We are going to bring you all the action from an entertaining match day 16. As always, joining me to discuss all the action from the Zweite Bundesliga is the one and only Eva Lotte Baller. Eva, good morning. How are you today?
I love that you kind of stopped asking me that, or you were thinking about not asking me that. Because I've been coughing this whole pre-recording talk. I'm okay. Work in at Christmas time is obviously horrible. Mm. Doesn't make it easier that some people just don't follow the rules with the whole 2G stuff. It doesn't help that it doesn't really get bright in Germany anymore, like on daytime. But otherwise, I'm very happy that I'm here, that I'm able to speak. Hopefully my voice will last long enough. Otherwise, I do apologize in advance. Try to keep the coughing muted. I do not have COVID, just to make sure of that. And yeah, I'm pretty sure all Hamburg fans wouldn't love the sight of Matthew right now, because he wears a jersey of a team in Lower Saxony that, yeah, just got a win on the weekend.
Yes, and we will talk about that particular team later in the program, but we'll start with a team that has secured itself as the champions of the Hinrunde. That's St. Pauli. They took on Schalke on the Saturday night kickoff, and they won 2-1. And it is ironic, though, albeit it's not Halloween that's been and gone, but it would be a former Schalke player who would haunt his former club. That's Guido Burgstaller. He scored twice in the opening 40 minutes on 20 and 39. He has now 14 goals this season. He is also the top scorer in the Zweite Bundesliga. He did that quite similarly at Nürnberg before, of course, he joined Schalke. But it didn't mean that Schalke didn't have its own trump card. Rodrigo Salazar, in his return to the Milan tour, he scored a beautiful goal to make it 2-1. They almost thought they had equalised through Thomas Ovoyan, but Marvin Peringer was offside only just, and that would have given the Royal Blues a share of the spoils. It's fair to say that, not making excuses for the Royal Blues, they were a little bit battered and bruised. They were missing quite a few of what you would consider their first team regulars. It was a plucky performance, but it was in vain in the end. St. Pauli, not only winners in this game, but they will be top heading into the winter break.
Yeah, and I mean, it's something I do want to talk about, because I see kind of a pattern here in the last couple of games for St. Pauli, that they look to have an easy halftime lead of 2 goals normally. And then kind of throughout the second half, they do, I don't want to say bottle it, but because they get the 3 points in the end. But kind of the the amount of concentration they had in the first league, the amount of, or the way they dominated a game in the first half, they can't really apply into the second half. It was the same against Sandhausen, for example. But as I said, in a couple of games in the last couple of weeks, I mean, you might have hinted it's because it's coming towards the winter break, and yeah, they still win the game, and this is what normally gets them promoted. Those games where you, over 90 minutes, are maybe not the better team, because you let your opponents be a part of the game as well, but get the 3 points in the end because you scored your goals early enough. For Schalke, I mean, I have to say, if you just look at the last 15 minutes or so just shortly after that Salazar goal, a point would have been deserved, But honestly, a game is 90 minutes. And if you cannot implement, especially as a Schalke team, it's not like an underdog kind of team. If you can't put that on the pitch for 90 minutes, you should not be mad about an offside decision, nor about not winning that game because the XG showed differently or something like that. Because, I mean, you have to say in the first half, they could thank Martin Freise that there were no more goals for St. Pauli. I mean, if you look at the stats, Burgstaller had 8 shots on goal, 4 out of them on target. And yeah, Freise was pretty good. And I mean, for St. Pauli, Vasil once again, brilliant in goal. But I keep on saying I like Schalke without Terodde. I wouldn't have thought that they would perform so well, that they would find so many different ways. But to win against St. Pauli at home is just a very, very difficult thing to do. I mean, out of 8 home games, they won 8. They have that. Actually, because if you were wondering why there were why there was a full stadium, while in other cities and regions there were ghost games or games behind closed doors, it's because the new regulation, the COVID regulation, was implemented after this weekend, so they could still have 26,000 in the stadium. Will be different the weekend on. Good win for St. Pauli. As mentioned before, they should try to get their concentration up again, at least when it comes to the new year. I think they are the Herbstmeister, so they wouldn't be really, they don't really care, I think. But as the history shows, being the Herbstmeister does not automatically mean you get promoted. I think their neighbors from the Volkspark Stadion know that very well. It's always that small title. It's always something you can be proud of, but nothing you could rely on. And they should try to, play their dominance, play it through, maybe make them do not hesitate so much in defense, because in the end, there were before the Salazar goal, I think three St. Pauli defenders couldn't really defend 2 headers, and I don't know, in general that was a bit worrying. But yeah, in the end, as mentioned, a good game by St. Pauli. And also, I'm a person who hates short corners, like if they're executed in the initial way, and St. Pauli did a playbook and how to do it well with Paccarada and Burgstaller for its second goal, I think. And
yeah, it is interesting with St. Pauli, and you were right in saying that their second halves, there is a fade period where teams can get on top of them, and in this case, you know, a 2-goal lead can be very dangerous because concession really invites the pressure, and we've seen that a few times in a couple of the Schalke games this year where they've gone 2 goals down at a complete fault of their own, get a goal back, and they either make something happen or they concede straight away. In this case, Schalke did put the pressure on in that last 15 minutes. They were unfortunately unlucky, but correctly given as offside in the build-up. I think We did discuss a few weeks ago that this was always going to be a tough stretch for Schalke. It doesn't get any easier. They get Nürnberg on Friday night, and then they are at Hamburg to end 2021. And they have to pick up points. If you look at the gap between the top 9, it's starting to spread out, and you don't want to head into the winter break down double digits in a point deficit. So, you know, they're going to have to pick up points against 2 teams in the same position as them. So it'll be fascinating to see. But yes, congratulations to St. Pauli. Let's move on to one of the upsets of the match day. It was Darmstadt's game against Fortuna Düsseldorf, and you would be certainly at miss for not thinking that Düsseldorf had any sort of a chance in this game. And in fact, in our kick tip, only one person was brave enough to pick Fortuna Düsseldorf, and that person reaped the rewards with a 3-1 victory to the visitors. And we spoke last week about the pressure on Christian Preußer, and this was the response that they desperately needed. It would be Roven Hennings, of course, who will for almost forever be Fortuna's top goal scorer in every single season. They have others, but it'll always be number 28. He's got 7 goals this season. He scored on 16 minutes. He should have been given the second goal, and I think it's blasphemous that it didn't go to him. They gave it as an own goal to Klaus Kajula, despite the fact the ball was clearly on target, and all he did was deflect the ball over the top of Marcel Schuhen. So they should have given him the goal regardless. Carly Nora, who was brilliant in this game, he added a third. The only blip really was that they conceded a penalty, and then Philip Tietz added his 12th goal of the campaign. Arguably, this was Fortuna's best performance. They had pretty good goalkeeping. Again, not saying a lot because the bar is very, very low the way Düsseldorf have played in recent weeks. And yes, the XG won't say it, but defensively, a strong performance against a team that has been known this season to bully the poorer opponents.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, actually, scoring against Darmstadt at home is a very difficult task to do, especially this season. And I was impressed by Düsseldorf. I really didn't thought they would turn that chip at least a bit around, slowly setting a new course. Obviously, still one win doesn't mean it's all uphill from now on. But yeah, the way they played it, I really loved that Khaled Nara goal in the end as well. And yeah, just the way they transitioned their play, the way they wanted to go forward. This is something we have been criticizing the weeks before. They did move forward in a good way. They only had like a plan A to go forward, and that was find Ruben Hennings, just somehow a lot of crosses, and it was not a good game to watch when Fortuna Düsseldorf was involved. It was very different in this game. Obviously, Darmstadt tried to come back, but you had the feeling, because Düsseldorf was so efficient in using their chances. I mean, they had 3 shots on target, 3 goals, that Darmstadt couldn't really find the back of the net. And obviously, as you've mentioned already, Raphael Wolf was brilliant. He's giving Florian Kastenmeier a run for his job. It's going to be tough for him. In the end, I think this is something Düsseldorf needs. Not only can, but needs to build on in the future. Because once again, with Düsseldorf, they're one of the teams I fear that if they have one good performance, they think everything from now on will just like happens its way, and it's not going to be. It was good for Preußer to get those 3 points, but yeah, they're not done there, especially because Hannover picked up points as well. I do think the win was deserved. XG does not tell everything, as you've mentioned. And this was a good way of keeping, because we all know if you let Darmstadt score a goal or two, they easily take over that game. And because Düsseldorf kind of turned it around and then knew after 76 minutes, okay, Darmstadt has to offer a lot to turn this around, and besides that penalty, nothing really happened. So, yeah, good result for Düsseldorf.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating if you look at the season as a whole, from their wins. Is it 1, 2, 3? Yeah, out of their 5 wins this season, 4 of them have come away from home, which is quite amazing. To me, you know, their last away win was on match day 8 against Ingolstadt. Last win was match day 11 against Karlsruhe. So they've been in weird patches where they win, then they don't. They go through a period of five games or so. They don't win anything. They look terrible. And then they'll pick up a result that they really shouldn't get. But they have, this season, beaten the teams around them. They've beaten Aue. They've beaten Sandhausen. They've beaten Ingolstadt. The outliers, of course, are now Karlsruhe and Darmstadt. They get St. Pauli on the weekend, which is the late kickoff game on Saturday night. And to really, you know, throw the cat amongst the pigeons, getting a result there would be incredibly important for them, but will be very, very difficult against a St. Pauli team that certainly can, I think, in Kate, can very much control what Dusseldorf have been doing. Let's go to our final game of Group 1, and another upset, really, if you look at the table. This game that did have some controversy throughout it. Heidenheim 3, Jahn Regensburg 0. Game started off really, Jan looked good early in the first 15 minutes. They had a couple of chances that they failed to convert. Then Christian Kulwetter opened the scoring on 23 minutes. And then Jan went down to 10 men when David Otto, who previously played at Heidenheim, on loan from Hoffenheim, he was sent off for, it looked like an elbow to the head of a Heidenheim player. He was given a straight red card. We'll discuss it later. But it was a game-changing decision because in the end, Heidenheim were able to control the game. Robert Leipertz, he scored his fourth of the campaign. And then Jan Schopper, who was, for me, the best player on the ground in this game, he scored his first goal of the campaign. And Heidenheim have now won three on the bounce. And it is just continues to be increasingly frustrating to really gauge where they're at as a football club. But one thing is certain, when Robert Leipert scores, Heidenheim wins.
Very true. And, I mean, you have to say once again, maybe we need different approaches for head injuries. I mean, Geipel was, at first I thought Bezushkov was hit a bit harder, and he played on, I don't know. And I mean, you had the feeling after that mistake by Maya, which didn't lead to a goal, because I think Elvedi, just cleared on the line. Regensburg didn't really seem to be in the game. Obviously, it didn't help that you had that break because of that injury time. I mean, a good counterattack by Heidenheim, and obviously Kuvira with a beauty of a shot. But yeah, as you put it in the notes as well, it really helped Heidenheim that Jan was going down to 10 men. I'm not completely sure if it's a clear red card. I think if he gives it, you can't really overrule it, because it looks very, very stupid, honestly. You have to say, even if it wasn't that, as we say in German, Tätlichkeit, like as we've seen in the past, like not that brutal of a foul, it's just stupid to take that challenge. And maybe sometimes stupidity needs to be punished, was in that case. And I mean, obviously, it's always very difficult going down to one man, and then if your opponent's already one goal up. But we've seen in the past that sometimes those teams do find ways to challenge the opponents, and Regensburg did not do so. I thought they were way too passive. Silvic, which thought the same, was substituting two forwards on the pitch for two defensive players out. But even after that, was very poor. I think the XG say for 0.07 to 0.81. And the Greensburg can really thank Maya that wasn't the highest scorer in the end, because he was brilliant against Kleinitz and Leipertz. And yeah, defensive-wise, Rings were very poor. In the end, three Ringsburg players can't stop Leipertz, running behind him, not really tackle him in a way. So yeah, really good result for Heidenheim. The weird season keeps on giving. yeah, this is perfect. Like, it, in a weird way, it fits perfectly into that season so far for Heidenheim. It's a result you might expect it. The last seasons wouldn't really expect this season, so that's why it fits perfectly, actually.
Yeah, and to showcase how odd their season really is, they've now won four of their last five games, and that means they are equal with Darmstadt for the most points in the last five games, which is just ridiculous, considering prior to this stretch, they were on a losing streak and they didn't look like they could beat anybody. I'm with you, Eva, on the Otto of sending off. I see what he's trying to do in that situation, which he's trying to get off his defender. And sometimes it can be clumsiness in the sense that he's trying to get, you know, just create space. But in creating space, he catches the head, and no matter which way you look at it, it's going to have a bad connotation. And in the end, he was sent off. Let's take our first break. And on the other side, how about a third upset? Let's just continue the upset times for some teams. We're going to turn over to Hanover when they took on Hamburg. It was all change in Hanover heading into match day 16. As we know from the last episode, Jan Zimmermann was out and U23 head coach Christoph Dabrowski was in charge. Expectations not particularly high for Hanover, but they were hoping to maybe upset the apple cart a little bit. It didn't look like things were going particularly well at the start, when it looked like that Bobby Glatzel, our man, had opened the scoring on 10 minutes. However, Bakary Yatta was offside in the build-up. Immediately after, they were punished. After a set piece from Hamburg, Hanover were able to quickly counter-attack, and Linton Meiner got his second goal of the campaign on 14 minutes. Hamburg continued to enjoy the lion's share of possession. At times, it was almost like one team was kicking around the ball and the other one was just hoping to get somewhere near it. But as we know with the Tim Walter system, having heaps of possession is one thing, but creating chances is another. And when you only create less than 10 chances in a game under his system, it is very hard to get the 3 points. Hanover hold on to get their first win since match day 7. And whilst we wait to hear who their head coach will be, whether it might be Uwe Rösler or Daniel Tiun, one thing is certain, an important win for Hanover.
Yeah, and I mean, we thought really, and we have that group chat with the guys from a German football podcast, and we've been talking about how Robert Glatzel is performing, and I was like, well, that was fun while it lasted, and like 2 seconds later, Hanover scored. That was unfortunate for Hamburg, yeah. I mean, I have the feeling this is not statistically proven. I have the feeling the only two goals Meiner, like every time Meiner scores, it's against Hamburg. I have a feeling. I think it happened last year as well, where Hamburg then scored. Not last year, the year before. Time is relative. we're gonna end in 1-1 in the end. No, but what I wanted to say, in a way, I was a bit impressed by Hanover. I really liked how Maxi Bayer was going forward before the 1-0. I mean, he could have scored if Johansson, wouldn't have stood there. Good save, in my opinion. He couldn't really do a lot afterwards. It's not really his fault. Good defending, I have the feeling. Hanover really put a focus on that after they scored. So from time to time, it was very visible. They had like those 2-4 lines. That was especially against the ball, very, very visible throughout the game. They did that very well, in my opinion. And for Hamburg, I mean, you have to say, Alidu wasn't as good in this game as he was in the weeks before, which is completely understandable. He's a very young player this time. Yata was a bit better again. Then there was this. There were two discussions where you can ask about the VAR, but also, whether Stegemann should have seen that immediately. First of all, before the 1-0, Muruya versus Yata. I don't know about you. I think if Stegemann immediately gives this as a penalty, it wouldn't be overruled. But in that case, it's once again, don't really think the VAR needs to overrule it. In my opinion, Stegemann should have seen that because I think he had a very clear sight. And then it's a penalty. And then Johansson was kind of lucky. It was an offside decision before. Otherwise, he would have been sent off. The offside was a very, very close call. So, yeah, in the end, they can be happy about that. This is, in a way, it's a typical Hamburg game. They won two games in a row at home, very dominant. But that's what we keep saying. They don't have consistency in how they play. They cannot perform equally each week, and they can't even put the basics on the pitch from time to time. And this is what happens in this game, in my opinion. They were so, in a way, so shattered that that first goal didn't count deservedly, that they just decided, okay, well, this game is over now. And in the end, you can't really put the whole defeat on Sascha Stegemann, in my opinion, because Hamburg just did not offer enough. And because I already mentioned Yata, once again, talks about his person, and I don't really want to say something new because, in my opinion, Felix Tamsud once again found the perfect words on Twitter. And I think Matthew can speak for both of us once again, full solidarity, because the way, what young people have to endure as refugees is something we should focus on and not to make their lives more difficult with bureaucracy in Germany. This is my take on that. And
I think Eva and Felix, if you don't follow Felix, obviously you should, F Tamsut on Twitter. Dude always spits, always encapsulates the situations like this perfectly. I mean, it's kind of crazy, and we'll talk about the football in a moment. How we forget that the people, they feel emotions, and you know, when you make a life changing decision like this, the red tape really should disappear into the distance. He's trying to have a better life for himself, and hey, you know, it's just the witch hunting needs to stop. Like this, you know, we are all prone to mistakes. Who here is perfect? Like no one is. And I'd love to meet the perfect man or woman, or individual, for that matter. Because I don't think that. Yeah, good luck. Football wise, we've talked about this with Tim Walter's side. And in general, in a football general sense, if you manage one shot on target, it's going to be very, very hard to win games of football, which is what Hamburg managed. And they had, I think it was just a weird game that they played where they kept doing the same thing and hoping that it would eventually work out. Really, the method to insanity situation where they would get to wide areas, the fullbacks in Jimura and Haya would overlap, they'd whip the ball in and it would be cleared out, rather for a corner or back into play. Maybe do something different. I don't know. I mean, they seem to run out of ideas rather quickly, and a team that, like Hanover, who have been just absolutely abysmal all season, a team that hadn't kept a clean sheet since their last victory, which was on match day 7, made them look like a competent defensive team. So I think enough is said on that. Big win for Hanover. We still wait to see who their new manager will be, but for Christoph Dabrowski, he was a very happy man at the end of the 90. Now, to a team that for the first time introduced its new manager to the touchline. That's Ole Werner. It's Werder Bremen. And probably the opponent you'd want to play in a home opener for your new manager. That's Erzgebirge Aue. We know Aue are a struggling away side. And, well, Bremen just put on the blitz and they destroyed Aue in a resounding affair. And three players in particular who deserve to be singled out for good reason, because we know that they are some of the least efficient goal getters in terms of expected goals in the Zweite Bundesliga, and they all scored. Romano Schmid opened his account on 7 minutes. Then Miloš Veljković produced something out of this world, his inventiveness, and even he was surprised, I think, that he'd beaten Martin Manuel. He's not in this list of three players, because the other two, of course, are Marvin Dux, who scored on 53 minutes, and then Niklas Füllkrug continues his incredibly good form of recent. He had a goal, he had two assists. Incredible. It seems unusual that a team that we know has this offensive quality has struggled to score goals quite frequently, but geez, they looked good. You could tell the system had been implemented well. I know that every person in England is fawning over Ralf Rangnick, but that Ole Werner performance, that is the perfect debut. He couldn't have drawn it up any better.
Yeah, and I just love the way he stands on the sidelines. I just love as a neutral that, or as a neutral spectator of the Zweite Bundesliga, that he's back in business. He's a brilliant coach, and you could really see that Werder thought the same. And I mean, as you've mentioned, you have to put it in perspective who the opponent was, and that it was away from home for that opponent where they aren't particularly good. But yeah, for Werder, very, I had the feeling they had that really one way and it worked perfectly for nearly every goal, and that was just overplay, overrun the last defensive line of Aue and we're through. And they did that numerous of times, and that was the thing I was looking at it for Aue, especially at the beginning as well. There were three or four players in the more or less same position, or a positioned close to that one Werder player, but nobody's going towards them, especially for the second goal. I mean, first of all, I didn't think Miloš Veljković could do that. I'm not sure about you, but I was like, what the hell is happening now? But yeah, that I had, it was, I think it was after a set piece, and you do either that zonal defense or you one-on-one with your opponent's players, and Aue clearly had that zonal defense going on there. But this is, if we talk about how to do short corners, playbook style, St. Pauli, this is a how not to do zonal defense, Aue style. Honestly, if you do it like that, at least if there are four players against one of your opponent's players, one of them should go towards that possible goal scorer. And that was Veljković. I mean, even you can't expect him to put out that move, but even if he is touching the ball, this could be a potential dangerous situation. And the four Aue players around him were not doing anything, and that's not how you can defend, period. The combination, Dukšekuk for the third goal was very good as well. This is Werder Bremen how we love to see it if we compare it to the last week, and I think I'm pretty sure all Werder fans will love it. Same thing with Düsseldorf though. One win doesn't mean it's now only uphill. They have to implement that for the next games, but with Ole Werner in charge, you really have the feeling it's at least there's someone on the sidelines who talks a bit more with the players, who's not all about, yeah, obviously you have to win, but it's not all about winning, but also that you just have good communication in your team.
Yeah, we know that he was someone that Bremen wanted in the summer. and they had to settle for Marcus Hanfang in the end, and we all know how that went. But I think this is the Bremen we expected to see, right? I mean, sure, their squad might not be considered as strong as some of the others on paper, but they've got some incredibly good individual quality. It was all about extracting that individual quality that had been through the ringer. Relegation is not particularly nice, and we know it can be quite difficult to get back up. Zweite Bundesliga is testament for that. It's not like the Championship where teams like Norwich and Fulham can go up and down, up and down. It was always going to be tough, and just the game plan worked a treat. Things went into the right direction, and you know, they play Regensburg, and then they finish against Hanover away. They're both very winnable games for them. They could take 4 points or 6 points. And then you head into Christmas and things are up. Things look good. And there's a positivity around the dressing room. They are going to be a team to watch now. I think we were convinced that it would take a bit of time with Marcus Hanfang. Again, who knows what happens in the next two games. But, you know, they certainly, to me anyway, this was their best performance of the season, even though it was against a team that you'd expect them to beat. So let's go on to our final Group 2 game. Nuremberg, Holstein Kiel. An interesting game. We saw Nuremberg release their specialty kit, which they do around December. What a nice looking kit that was, with the gold fonts and... Oh, it's already sold out, and I know myself and Hannes were very much crying in the corner and how disappointed we were not to get our hands on that lovely, lovely kit that they were wearing. And they did the kit justice in the end. 2-1 winners, the final score. Manuel Schaefler opened the scoring on 6 minutes, his third of the season. And then Eric Shurinov made it 2-0. He has 5 now on 63 minutes. Julian Korb scored a belter on 88 minutes. But it was too little, too late. It was an interesting game that we saw from Nuremberg, because usually we see them play with a bit more possession. They're a high-intensity team on the ball, and they did a lot of the defending in this one. They sat back a lot. They were trying to play a lot stronger in the offensive transition game, which they did with great success. As they were able, despite the minimal time on the ball, they were able to create a ton of chances on the goal. They were probably unlucky not to score more than the two goals they got. But ultimately, good win for them. They do lose Oscar Sorensen, which we'll talk about in a second. Big loss for them. But we talk for the here and now. A good win for Nuremberg, considering they've got some pretty big games coming up heading into Christmas.
Yeah, and I mean, you really have to talk about the waste of chances by Nuremberg, especially in the first half. A lot of chances. I really loved Lino Tempelmann in this game. He was very good, very lively. And I think it was especially in the first half, the way you need to play against a Kiel side, who is always... able to upset you, and maybe they just started too late to go into this game, and I mean in the end it would not have been deserved for them to get a point out of this, because Nuremberg was, especially the first 60 minutes or so, was just too good. That second goal was perfectly timed in a way that this was some sort of that time where Kiel was trying to go back into the game after, I don't know what Rapp told them at halftime, but I don't think it was all nice words. Tried to implement that into their game, and like they didn't have numerous chances, but they were trying to put themselves into that, or just manifest themselves in that Nuremberg half. And this is why it was perfectly timed, was also beautifully scored by Eric Shuranov. We said that last week, slowly coming back to the day. So he was playing towards the end of last season. And yeah, but losing Oscar Sørensen, never overinterpret statistics, but especially if it comes to like successful tackles, clearances, interceptions, Sørensen is always a vital character for Nuremberg, and losing him as that, as we say in German, Abräumer in a way, but also just a fighter. He will be missed by Robert Klaus and his teammates, definitely.
And it's really interesting to see who they'll go with, because, of course, their first choice pair was Sørensen and Hübner, and Hübner's still out with a shoulder injury. Schindler's been really good since he's come in. So maybe they go for Mario Suva, the 22-year-old who comes from their youth academy. Do they go with Nota? I'm intrigued to see what the fit is going to be in that centre-back pairing. Of course, they've got Schalke on Friday night, which is typically a friendly game before the actual game happens, and it's all friendly afterwards. But it's a massive game for them because they are 2 points away from an automatic promotion spot. And as we saw, they were one of the teams that avoided tripping over themselves on match day 16. So, yeah, interested to see what Robert Klaus trots out in terms of their formation. We could even see a three at the back, maybe chuck one of the centre defensive midfielders in a centre-back role. Maybe we might see Konstantin Rausch play as well. Who knows? It's interesting to see what the tactical outlook will be for the club on Friday night. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll break down the final three games of match day 16, starting with Dresden and Karlsruhe. Dresden were hoping to make it back-to-back wins at home when they took on a Karlsruhe side who dismantled Hanover the week before. In a pretty anonymous first half, neither team was able to really settle itself into the game. However, the second half came to life, and one player in particular put his footprint on this particular fixture. His name, Ransford Yeboah Konigsdorfer. His first goal was a thing of beauty. He made Jerome Gondorf look like a silhouette, opening the scoring on 47 minutes. He did Konigsdorfer. However, Fabian Schleusner, who's been a pretty good acquisition for Karlsruhe this season, he got his fourth goal of the campaign on 53 minutes. But then it was that man again, Konigsdorfer, with a brilliant goal to beat Marius Gersbeck. It was 2-1. Christoph Daferner, who was playing in a different role this time, normally we see him as an isolated number 9. He was playing as number 10 behind the two strikers. He put home on 69 minutes to get his eighth goal of the campaign. Definitely a tactical switch we saw from Alexander Schmidt, playing the two strikers being Konigsdorfer and Brandon Barillo. Daferner really looked comfortable playing in that number 10 role, and it worked a treat for them. 3 points, a vital 3 points considering wins for Hanover and Fortuna Dusseldorf. It means they move up to 12th place. They still have the second most defeats in the league, but they won't care. A big win for Dynamo.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, this is what I love about the league. 1 week winning 4-0 against a team from that bottom half, and next week losing 3-1. I think it was great coaching by Alexander Schmidt. I mean, the first half was very weird. I mean, Karlsruhe looked to be the better team in the beginning, but after they had one or two chances, both attacking sections, I don't know what they did, but was not attacking. And then, yeah, the second half was a better football game, mainly because Dresden, obviously, Kaiser was too passive in the second half, was kind of... Well, I mean, that the equalizer came after his set piece did say a lot for Kaiser in that game, in my opinion. And, I mean... Königsdorfer with a good game. Gordon should have done better in defending him. And that yellow red card for Choi was then really doing the rest for Dresden. And I have to say, he already had a couple of challenges against the Dresden players before, and going in to an opponent, if you already have the yellow card and the referee told you once or twice, okay, this is like, you do not get immediately the second yellow, but then going in like that, honestly, it's a foul, it's a yellow card, so he was sent off deservedly, in my opinion. Besides Königsdorfer and Daferner, I thought Schröder had a good game as well for Dresden, and Daferner, I mean, it's his 7th goal out of 8 at home. He really, even when the fans aren't there, he loves to score at home. And huge win for Dresden, obviously, as you've mentioned before, because of the results on the other pitches. But yeah, that's what you love to see. And I think in that, it was deserved with the three goals. And I mean, Kaisi did not offer a lot. And similar to Heidenheim in a way, it does fit into this season because they haven't been as consistent as the year before, maybe. But yeah, I still think Christian Eichner is a good fit for them, and especially this year with a lot of good teams at the top half of the table, it's very difficult to really stand out.
Yeah, it's true, and we can harp on it a bit about the league being, you know, the toughest it's ever been, and so many teams can make a claim for promotion. And I think you could make a case for Karlsruhe being one of those outsider teams that could maybe make its way to the playoff, but yeah, they've been far too inconsistent, and their best and very worst, while last year was pretty close together, and you could still distinguish it. This year, it's a chasm. Their worst is really, really bad, and their good can challenge the best teams in the league. And unfortunately, we're seeing a lot more of their worst self than what they are capable of. It was a big loss for them. They get Heidenheim on the weekend, whereas Dynamo are at Auer in the derby. Let's move then to Sandhausen. They took on Paderborn. You would suspect Paderborn, with their superior away record, that they would easily take advantage of Sandhausen. However, the game didn't really play out that way, especially after Marcel Melem opened the scoring on 5 minutes. Sandhausen were by far the better team throughout the game, and they in fact won a penalty, which Pascal Testrot missed. Jan Akut made a very strong save to deny Testrot the goal. Then, you know, Sandhausen continued to press, and they had an opportunity, and in a game which was just nasty. It was like watching Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen. If it was 11v11 on a football pitch, it may have been a miserable day at the Hartwald, but bloody hell, there were a lot of challenges that could have easily warranted a sending off. But Sandhausen eventually found its equaliser. Bashkim Aydini got his first goal in Sandhausen colours in stoppage time to get a result. But it doesn't really feel like the scoreboard was in fact representative of the game. It just feels, for me anyway, personally, from watching it, Sandhausen probably should have won this game. But I guess it's Sandhausen after all.
That at the beginning, or at the introduction, I really felt that. Generally, it was a really, really bad game to watch, in my opinion. I mean, Paderborn was poor, Sandhausen was poor. I mean, Sandhausen had the majority of the chances, but I mean, it's Sandhausen. Once again, want to point out that you do see what Sebi Zuko can do to the team if he wants to. I do think so. But yeah, I mean, it's a bit typical of that game that not a lot happens for those, I don't know, 85 minutes after the goal by Melem, and then Dörfler has the huge chance to make it 2-0, and then, like, just a couple of minutes after, they concede, and defending was really, really poor. I mean, I don't really know. Zuku, I don't know if he wanted to should cross into that 18-yard box or it should have been a pass. I'm not really sure. I looked at it a couple of times, still not sure. It deflects off another player. And yeah, somehow it ends up at Idini. And if you just look at the jersey of Idini, it's full of mud. And yeah, it wasn't a pretty game. Shout out to Lewis. He was at that game. And yeah, let's just say it wasn't his favorite game to commentate. Well, I mean, in the end, good result for Sandhausen. In the past, they've shown they can challenge teams that are in that upper half. Shout out to Werder Bremen at this stage. But yeah, I mean, maybe it's a point to less, especially considering, once again, the other teams did on the weekend. But yeah, weird game.
Yeah, it certainly didn't really resemble a football match, or maybe a different kind of football match that is played in either Australia or the United States quite frequently. It was a very dirty game after all. And yeah, I think for Paderborn, they did have those two chances through Sebeni and Dorfler during stoppage time, which Dorfler hit the post and Sebeni, for some reason, just tapped it to the goalkeeper. You could tell that they were missing Sven Mikkel, especially. He was unavailable for this game. And yeah, they just missed having that potent striker up top. It just didn't work tactically for them, and you could tell they were missing. Still have no idea why Lukas Kwasniok's even allowed to be coaching at this moment in time, but that is, I guess, another story for another time. Let's move then to our final game of the match day. Hansa Rostock against Ingolstadt. You would think this is a game that Hansa Rostock would win quite comfortably, but when Thomas Keller scored a brilliant free kick just before halftime, it was a red herring in the plans of Jens Hartel. Rostock continued to dominate the game as they had done, and then John Verhoek scored on 49 minutes to get his 10th goal of the campaign. He is one of the top goal getters in the Zweite Bundesliga. He's having a cracking season, and you can remember the times that when he was at Duisburg and he was there, and he wasn't scoring many goals, but very, very good for him. Ingolstadt had a penalty that was overturned in this game, which neither here nor there. But one player who stood out for me anyway was the debutant for Ingolstadt, Robert Jendrusch. Many may know him as someone who was the backup at Erzgebirge Aue a few seasons ago. He's the number two in Ingolstadt. He came in for in goals this time for Fabian Buntic. And he was very good in this game, and arguably the difference, because Rostock were by far the better team in this game. But alas, when you have a keeper who is determined to keep the result at 1-1, you see the points are eventually shared.
Yeah, and I mean, Rostock should have won this, not only because that's what I said they should do on Kicktip, but because I were the better team in this game. Yeah, FCE was more or less dull in this game. They had a couple of chances, but I mean, the challenge by Gebauer in the end, or demanding a penalty, was just a joke. So I'm very glad it wasn't a penalty. It was overruled by the VAR. Yeah, I mean, it was clear that John Verhoek was going to score. If not him, who else? But yeah, and I mean, as mentioned, Rostock should have won this at least with a goal ahead, not with my even more. We're the better team. Verhoek needs to improve his accuracy if he takes shots on goal. Now this is the point where I just my voice tells me just don't keep speaking. It's pointless. Yeah. I mean, if you look at Ingolstadt, 30% possession, 51% pass success, 51. You only play 237 passes, and out of those, only 120 are actually accurate. This is worrying. This is not how you stay in the league. We knew this before, but yeah, do not know. Yeah, Jenrich was good in goal, but yeah, third time saying this, I don't really know how Rostock didn't win this.
It is a myth, really. It doesn't really defy logic, but they kind of got in their own way in the end. You know, you have as much possession as they did. They had 21 shots on goal for the game, and they scored once. It's inconceivable, but it's quite common, and surprisingly. They are in desperate need of finding another player who can score goals, because Jean Verhoek's got 10 of the 19 goals they've scored this season. In fact, he has as many goals as Ingolstadt has as a collective heading into match day 17. They are just... like they can do it. They showed glimpses, and we talked about it, I reckon, the last two podcasts, that you know, these are the games that they had to win because they're playing against sides that they can beat, and they know they can beat them, and they just dropped the 2 points, two valuable points that would have put them in 11th place ahead of Dynamo and Fortuna, and now they've got to play Hamburg away, which a short journey, but will be a tough fixture for them. You just don't know. And I guess with Ingolstadt, it's, well, we've seen this story before with a few other teams, and it usually ends in one way. Before we go, we always like to discuss our Kick Tip League, which has a new leader once again, and it would be the one and only host of the Rasenfunk, Mainzer Keller, and the brilliant Elf Lieben, it's the one and only Max Jakob Ost. He has 162 points. And the one person who actually picked Fortuna Düsseldorf to win was the guy who topped the round, Strobe Hovard. 12 was the magic number this time around. And finally, our podcast recommendation. Eva, who should we be listening to this week?
First of all, to the Kick Tip League, you really know it was a bad week for everyone with the top scorer of that week has only 12 points if you compare it to the week before where it was 23. Coming to podcast recommendations, I think we recommended this podcast before, Project Fußball. The first episode of season 3 is out, and it's about the 50+1 rule. I think it's always a very important topic, especially for people outside of Germany who are not that into the topic. They knew it does exist, but maybe do not really understand what's behind that. Go check it out. All the other episodes before were very, very good. So I highly recommend listening to that.
Absolutely. James Thorogood, who hosts the show, produced, and sometimes you get a bit of commentary from Jonathan Harding, two of the best in the business. We highly recommend you follow those two guys as well, because they're brilliant people as well, as well as Matt Ford, who is in this episode. That's enough from us for this week's episode of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. We, of course, will be back next week to discuss the final match day of the Hinrunde. We hope you will join us then. Enjoy the weekend's football, and we'll see you next time.